purpose-driven organization. There was a study done, and I can't remember the exact facts now, but it was done over 10 years where they tracked a number of companies, some that were purpose-driven and some were just more focused on sort of classic sort of sales and profits. And the ones that were purpose-driven outperformed anywhere between 5 and 15% the other companies.
Hello and welcome to Walk the Talk, our version of a podcast where you walk if you want to while we do the talking. So if you're up for it, plug in your earphones and listen while you take us on a walk. So use this time to move your body and nourish your mind. I'm Sarah Mayo, one of the co-founders and trainers at Point 3 Wellbeing, and I will be hosting this next episode of our Walk the Talk, the next in our series aimed at HR professionals, business leaders, and those that are interested in the mental health and wellbeing of people in the workplace. So, on to today's conversation. And I'm delighted to be joined by Julian Roberts, founder of Julian Roberts Consulting, Chief Resilient Officer, Executive Leadership Coach, and host of his very own podcast, Helping Organisations Thrive, which I had the pleasure of being on recently. So the tables have turned, and now, Julian, you are in the hot seat. So welcome.
Yes, I am in the hot seat, aren't I? That's why I'm wearing red, I think. So I'm feeling very hot today. No, thank you for inviting me. And yeah, it's a real pleasure to be here. And I'm looking forward to our conversations. I love talking to people.
Fantastic. So let's get started. Julian, in your own words, please, can you introduce yourself and share a little bit about your roles and responsibilities and also your experience perspective around mental health and well-being of people in the workplace and why it's important?
Okay, a big question. So a lot in that. Yes, so I'm an executive leadership coach with a real focus on resilience. I help build, develop resilience with individuals and with teams. I've been doing this for the last sort of 6 years or so, and I've spent 20 years working in the food industry as a senior sales leader. So I've led teams, developed teams, done strategy and various stuff like that. So that's a bit about me. In terms of how important my perspective on mental health, I never used to have a view on it. I never used to think it was an issue in the workplace many years ago. And I think more and more I've worked with clients and I find that, not that I specifically focus on helping people's mental health and well-being, perhaps like you do within your business, but coaching in itself does create an environment where people have the opportunity to think, reflect and process life and all sometimes de-stress in that context. And I think I create environments and a space for that. But I often find, and it's interesting over the last few years, that, you know, as much as I might be helping a leader with certain challenges and difficulties that within the organizations, you know, I think of them holistically as a person, and things crop up and I might then, you know, we might do a little side thing on helping them managing to sort of de-stress themselves or ways of building resilience in their life and things like that. So actually what I actually am doing is working on mental health, working on well-being in a very probably holistic way. And I guess having resilience at the core of what I do is fundamentally about your well-being, really. So that's my perspective on it, really.
Yeah, I think what you highlight there is quite interesting in that, you know, perhaps how people understand what mental health has changed or grown, because I think I agree with you. Maybe 10 years ago, I didn't really understand what mental health was, but simply speaking, we define it as how or a good sort of metric of your mental health is how you think, feel and behave. So what you do there around coaching and building resilience absolutely impacts how you think, feel and behave. So yeah, fascinating. Okay, well, I guess That leads to my first main question for you. In all of your conversations with business leaders on your podcast, but also in the coaching that you do, what do you believe is the greatest business challenge at this point in time when it comes to businesses and their people?
It's an interesting one, and I've thinking about this in terms of the last few years, what I've picked up really at the moment, it's people dealing with uncertainty. I think, mm-hmm. you know, the last 3 years, I think certainly for me as an individual, I think for everybody else with pandemic, you know, Ukraine war, financial sort of chaos in the UK last autumn, has created huge amounts of uncertainty. And I think that to me is one of the biggest challenges. And the reason why it's a big challenge for organizations, not only as leaders and business owners faced with that and how they manage their business and manage their people, and that's quite stressful and quite difficult to work through, is then having people come into your workplace who are feeling anxious, overwhelmed, because we all know what happens in your personal life happens in your work life and vice versa. And we need to think of people sort of holistically. It's not just about work, it's about their personal life. You know, people are the same wherever they are, they're that person. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges, is how you not only navigate an organization through uncertainty and manage that and develop the sort of strategies, but also is dealing with the people and dealing with emotions and dealing with what comes out of that and what makes people uncertain and working that through. So I think that has a huge impact on organizations, on everything, productivity, innovation, creativity, mood, impacts people's absences. It's the whole host it does. So I think that for me is what I'm picking up from my individual conversation, but also from my organizational conversations as well.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating. So that sense of uncertainty, not knowing, and not necessarily being able to cope with that uncertainty. And I think that sort of comes back to the resilience piece that you focus on, helping people to manage uncertainty, which is ultimately creates the stress response in our body. Mm. So if people can have the tools to manage that uncertainty better, maybe that's a sort of a great starting point for businesses. But yeah, I think it is an uncertain and disruptive time, and that of course poses many challenges for businesses and people alike. I'm going to reference a couple of studies because, of course, you know, we've seen over the last few years such a change, haven't we, in the way that people work, but also perhaps the shift of sort of power moving towards more of the employees deciding what type of organisation they want to work for. And we've all heard of the Great Resignation, driven by millennials and Gen Z, who are sort of choosing to work for organizations where there is greater flexibility, work-life balance is recognized and prioritized for them. But another study that I recently read from Gallup, which was talking about the number one reason that people are either deciding to stay with an organization or leave an organization is based on their relationship with their manager, their immediate manager. And I think it was actually 75% actually quit voluntarily because of that, because of their boss. What do you make of these trends or reports? You know, from your conversations with leaders, do you think which are the most sort of pressing for them right now?
Yeah, I think there's certainly some challenges, certainly in terms of retaining people, certainly some challenges in recruiting and attracting, you know, whether it's sort of millennials and sort of Gen Z sort of individuals. The whole piece on the manager, sort of, you know, the influence of a manager is significant. But I think sometimes, and I've been in organizations where, and I think the stat was more like 50% a few years ago, but it's used to I think, deflect what the real issue is in the wider culture of an organization sometimes. Often an organization will go, oh, they left because of that manager. And then the manager gets all the sort of hit and the impact of that. And I think that's unfair. I've been in an organization where that has happened. And actually, there's been some wider culture issues that the organization is not facing. The fact that high turnover isn't to do with the manager. There's an influence of the manager, but the manager's in a sea of a culture that he's struggling himself and therefore having an impact on that individual. So I think we've got to be careful sometimes where we just pin it on a manager. And I think it's sometimes, just look at the wider context of that. And I think that's important too, because we know the relationship with the manager, boss, director, whatever you want to call them, is vital. And, you know, that's the one who inspires you. And I think we need to get back to organizations that, and this is, I guess, what the Gen Zs are looking for, the millennials, is organizations that inspire you a little bit more. I think people don't go to work anymore just for the sake of getting some money. They go for a sense of inspiration and contribution and being valued in that context. And, you know, I talk a lot about sort of purpose within the context, individuals or some teams, because it's a fundamental in building resilience, but also it's a way of gripping people and grabbing people, you know, giving them, you know, your organizational North Star that's so beyond your organization. You know, I take the example, Tesla, I always used to think their mission was all about creating the sort of number one electric car sort of company in the world, which I think they are anyway. But actually, their mission statement is to accelerate the world to more renewable energy, which to me is far bigger than just selling cars. And it's far inspiring. And, you know, whether you're building those cars, selling those cars, or administrating within that organization, you're part of something bigger. And I think that, to me, is where we've got to get back to creating organizations where people feel inspired. And this is not just tick box of CSR, ESG, and bananas on a Friday, all that sort of stuff. I'm talking something really meaningful, really impactful in your community, in your what you do, beyond just what you sell and what services you provide to your clients and customers. And I think that's what people are looking for, because I think people more now are understanding they want meaning, because they're discovering their own purpose and they want meaning. Yeah. And they want to create that alignment. And I think that's where we want to create that organization. If you get that, then you get this sense of utopia. And we also know that, you know, purpose-driven organization, there was a study done, and I can't remember the exact facts now, but it was done over 10 years where they tracked a number of companies, some that were purpose-driven and some were just more focused on sort of classic sort of sales and profits. And the ones that were purpose-driven outperformed anywhere between 5% and 15% the other companies, because they were purpose-driven and they were more focused on the bigger picture rather than just on sales and profits. And so I think it's something that is more sustainable long-term. It's a bit more, takes a bit longer to implement and to get there. And it's not all about the next quarter, which often a lot of organizations base themselves on, but actually it's a bit bigger picture. So I think that's what we're going to do, start creating those organizations that are more inspiring.
Lots there, Julian, to unpack. And I love how you started by talking about that culture piece, and it isn't down to one manager by themselves. It is about the culture that they work within, but also everyone feeling like they have a role to play, they have a clear sort of sense of purpose, and that they are working towards that bigger kind of mission, as you've highlighted.
Sean here from Point Three Wellbeing. Just quickly jumping in to say a big thank you for listening to this podcast. If you want to find out a bit more about Point Three Wellbeing and how we support people in the workplace to stress less and smile more, then head to point3wellbeing.com or drop us an email to b_well@point3wellbeing.com. That's all from me. Back to the conversation.
I mean, that does sort of pose the question, though, you know, what can individuals do? Because sometimes you can feel quite sort of powerless as one individual if perhaps the culture of the organization, isn't as aligned to your values, but you are a great manager. What can individuals do to sort of influence the culture piece? Because I think we often talk about culture starting sort of from the top down, but it takes a bottom-up approach as well. Everyone has a responsibility, don't they, towards contributing to that culture. I mean, I'm interested particularly because you do so many sort of one-to-ones coaching. What can individuals do to help contribute to that that bigger cultural piece?
Yeah, I think you made the point. It depends on your level of influence within an organization. Clearly, if you're at the top as CEO, you have a lot more influence versus somebody who's not at the top. and I think you've got to be mindful. So I think for me, there's two things you can do immediately. The first thing is depending on the level of influence, or no matter what you is role modeling the behaviors, the values that you want to play out within the culture of your team. And you might be able to create a sort of microcosm ecosystem within your team. And you sort of bring in the values that matter to you and the behaviors that you want to see. We have to be careful here, though, because it's got to align broadly with the organization. Otherwise, you start getting this sort of jarring going on, and it just doesn't make sense. And so this is where I don't think almost bottom-up influence has a great impact because of that. And so I think role modeling is really important. And if you are a leader of influence, as much as just setting out culture and what you'd like to see and all the values and everything else, is living those values. If it's integrity, lead with integrity. If it's with passion, lead with passion, whatever it may be, but demonstrate it. And that has a bigger impact and influence on anybody or any organization than writing words on a wall and things like that. The other thing you do is leave. And that sounds really harsh, but if the organization doesn't align, doesn't have to completely align. We've got to realize that, and this is where I think sometimes where some people make mistake, my purpose is this, doesn't align with that organization. Well, you're never going to get complete alignment, but if you get broad alignments with the values, I like their values, and I'm broadly aligned where they're going, then you'll be excited, motivated to go there, and that'd be more meaningful. Because money doesn't motivate people, money doesn't keep people going at all, really doesn't. It's quite short-lived. And so if there is a misalignment, or you realize you join an organization, I joined one many years ago and realized actually this organization is not what I thought it was from what I saw on the website and the people I met at the interview process. And I just, the values, the way they work, I was more entrepreneurial and they were very sort of centralized American company, very much into process. And that really slows things down, not very agile. All the things that went against me, and I struggled with it and found it difficult. At the time, I didn't realize probably what was jarring. Now I reflect on it, I think actually it just wasn't aligned to how I work, but also my values. And so I left, and that was probably the reason I left. I got sort of frustrated. And so I think comes a point where you perhaps have to leave because of that. And, rather than trying to change it, because in some ways I was a very small cog in a very massive organization. I wasn't going to change the culture of that business unless I came the CEO. And so I think that's where for me is. So if you can change, make sure you're role modeling and impacting your behaviors that way, or leave.
Yeah, so it's an acceptance of the reality of the situation, understanding what you can influence and what you can't, and reviewing your values and aspirations and seeing if they're in line with the organization that you work with. Yeah, I think that's really helpful. When it comes to those one-to-ones that you're having, what are some of the recurring themes that people are looking for support around or coaching through?
Yeah, there's a plethora of stuff. In terms of themes, I think a lot of people really want to know sort of more clarity on the way forward in life in their organization. They tend to have got into a, not a model, but they feel very sort of confused and a little bit overwhelmed. And so I help a lot of individuals, certainly senior leaders, to provide clarity of what the next steps are, where you're going. And what comes with that is also purpose. I do a lot of stuff with purpose, and it seems to just come up, and then they realize they don't feel very clear on their purpose. And so I help bring clarity to that purpose, because then they then realize why they're perhaps jarring with a particular individual or organization, or actually what really inspires them. And that really helps them fire up what they do next and how they go about it. A big one, which is always comes up, is obviously dealing with people. And it's usually dealing with difficult people rather than dealing with good people. But inspiring people, getting people to be inspired and navigating those difficulties and trying to help people see, you know, beyond what's on the surface and go a little bit deeper. What's the triggers? What's the sort of reason behind that behavior? And trying to get to a place where people feel really motivated. And I guess almost creating an approach that's more empowering rather than sort of dictatorial. And I try and help my clients get to that place where they feel more, they're inspiring and empowering people as opposed to just telling people what to do and monitoring them. And so I think, yeah, there's challenges with people. And then I think what under all this, which is what people really want to get to, is how can they get fulfillment and joy in what they do? You know, most people I deal with are hard workers. They love what they do, and they just want to do it in a better way, in a way that provides them with fulfillment, where they get excited about the future, excited about what they're doing with the people around them, the people who work for them, and a joy in it as well. Because once we find fulfillment and joy in what we do, then we will then start to really enjoy and excel and start to create that momentum around us as well. So those are, I guess, key themes that come out. So yeah, that clarity, dealing with difficult people, and then wanting that sort of sense of fulfillment and joy. How do I get that?
Yeah, I think that first point on clarity, certainly a lot of the evidence is showing that actually that is one of the main solutions for managing burnout. So one of the main drivers is often that overwhelm, overwork, lack of resources. But I don't think that is something that's easy to solve for many businesses. But what they can do is support people through by giving clarity and helping them to prioritize. Because yes, I think many businesses are resources is often kind of the biggest drain on people. But if we can give people help with that clarity, that can ease some of the overwhelm, I think, that causes burnout.
I do just interrupt there, an exercise on that. What matters and what's a priority to a business? Because obviously everybody, you know, boss said everything's a priority. Well, clearly it's not. And so you can get a group of, whether it's a board in the room or a team in the room, and list all what's the priority, and then go, which aligns to your bigger purpose and mission? And then you'll find a lot of things won't. And then you go, okay, let's just put those to the side. And then you get the ones that are left, and they go, okay, what's going to make the most impact in the next, whatever, 30, 90 days? And then that's what you focus on. And that creates real clarity and point of impact, and then takes away all the dross, because some people end up doing stuff because A, either we're told to do it, or B, they just like doing it, but realize actually now things have moved on. We don't really need to do it anymore. And so I find that a helpful exercise. But you can do that as an individual, you can do it as a team, and you know, link it back to your purpose. But then the first thing, you've got to make sure you've got a purpose in your organization as well.
Yeah. And you've got to be constantly communicating, don't you, with your manager, with your team, and reassessing. And that sort of second piece about sort of dealing with difficult people. You know, the more we can understand the people that we work with, the more that we know them, maybe we can understand what's triggering that behaviour, perhaps. Mm. So, yes. OK, well, we're coming towards the end of the conversation. What advice do you have for any HR managers or business leaders listening in terms of how to prioritize mental health? So coming back to mental health and well-being people in the workplace. What advice do you have for anyone listening?
Apart from focusing on purpose, which is always for me a fundamental within an organization, is be an organization that really role models this whole mental health and well-being, and be a leader that happily says, I'm struggling, I'm taking some time out, happily models with, I'm going to go for a walk at lunchtime and that type of thing. A lot of people working from home now, or going to go around the, you know, literally half an hour walk, or I'm going to stop at 5 o'clock, or whatever it may be that you feel that's healthy, as creating a sort of well-being within your people. Role model it, tell people, show it. And it's more difficult, I know, in the context of people working from home, but you almost need to share your week, how you manage it, how you struggle with stress. And I think if more leaders start to say, this is how I, last week was really quite stressful for me, but this is how I managed it. I managed to do this in the evening. I went out for a drink with a friend, or I played a game of tennis, or whatever it may be that you do. And I think that to me is more powerful than anything else, is just to model it and show it, and almost allow people then to see, okay, if my boss is going for a walk at lunchtime, well, then it's okay for me to go for a walk then, isn't it? And have my little icon on my computer idle for an hour while I have a walk and I have some lunch, and things like that. So I think, to me, you can put in strategies. That's important, obviously, and that's what you do. And you can bring some real helpful things, but start showing people with it. But it starts, the leaders need to do it, and you've got to demonstrate it. So I've always said that in anything in life, you know, role modeling is the most powerful way to influence anybody and any organization. It's absolutely incredible. And I think people forget that actually you and I are role modeling right now. You know, the moment we walk into a room, we are role modeling, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing in how you're appearing, you're role modeling. And I think just be more cognitive and aware of that, and just demonstrate that, and be perhaps intentional that actually, you know, I really want to share that this with my team, because I think it really helped them perhaps open up or share about things, or help them with their mental well-being as well.
Yeah, love that. What you're talking there about is being vulnerable, isn't it? But, you know, there is a fine balance of being vulnerable, isn't it, as a leader? Yes, we want to create that culture, that safe space where people can be themselves, bring their whole selves to the workplace, as we say. And modeling the right behaviors, but, you know, leading in a vulnerable way is a difficult thing to do. It doesn't come easy and naturally to many.
It's not, and it comes to me, it's about creating that what I call psychological safety. That's how you create psychological safety, and that's what we want to create here, that people feel happy to learn, happy to share, happy to challenge you, and happy to share mistakes as well, that things have happened. And I think, but you've got to think all those areas and think, okay, how am I demonstrating this as well? And so you can start with a vulnerability of, oh, I did this, it didn't work out, but this is what I learned from it. And so you're sharing a mistake or an error or a failure, whatever you want to call it, but what you've learned from it. And so you're demonstrating that. So I think there is a vulnerability, and, you know, but where there's vulnerability, there's an immense courage comes with that as well. Oh, and the rewards, you know, I think it's, I heard somebody, there's a quote on psychological safety that says where vulnerability is rewarded. And I think when you are vulnerable, you are rewarded for it.
Yeah, we talk about vulnerability being sort of data. It's information from which we can all grow and develop and move forward in a better way. All right, so moving to our quick fire round of five questions. So, Julian, what are your three daily or perhaps weekly well-being non-negotiables? Those things that you prioritize day to day to manage stress and be more resilient?
Yeah, I'm a believer in developing real personal habits and things that are daily, and building like an inner core, like a framework that will help you in those times when it is difficult. And so my first one is going into cold water plunging. It's not so cold at the moment because it's warmed up everywhere, but you know, through the winter I'll go into something that's anywhere from -1 to sort of 4 degrees. Absolutely love that. Now I'm doing cold showers, I go in the sea a lot, and I find that de-stresses me, increases my dopamine, and feel real focus and clarity from that as well. So that's one thing I do in the morning. It's about cold stress to my body, and it's fantastic, and I recommend it. Second one is I also do what I call practice sort of gratitude. And what I love about the gratitude piece, and lots of studies been done now, where you get a physiological impact on your body as well. You get the sort of dopamine, the serotonin increases, which makes you feel good. I mean, who doesn't want to feel good naturally? And so I practice gratitude in the morning as well. So it sets my day off to a little bit more of a feeling good, seeing more opportunities rather than the general negative bias that we have as humans anyway, be more positive. And then the other one is I go for a walk or get out in nature daily. And that can be at 20 minutes to an hour, whatever. It could be a run sometimes as well. So just getting out in nature, and that could be down the sea, could be in the woods. And so they're sort of my three sort of, I'd say, non-negotiables that if I've not done those, I start to feel it. And I find I need to do those daily.
Oh, I love all three of those. Although I no longer do the cold showers, but I have tried it and it definitely is exhilarating. So the next question, what do you know now that you wish you'd known 5 years ago?
yeah, it's an interesting one. It's to be more present. I wish I'd known this more than 5 years ago, to be honest. Yeah. I've lived in a world of, you know, within sales where it's all about, you know, getting outcomes, getting objectives, getting goals, and pushing organizations forward, developing them. And there's nothing wrong with that, but slightly living in the future, I think. And I know we have to plan, so we don't plan, but I just found that quite unhealthy. And I remember my wife a number of years ago just said about, you know, enjoy the journey. It's not all about the destination, because you used to see me, whether I cook, whatever I do, I'm absolutely focused, and I miss everything along the way because I'm hitting this goal, hit the goal, but I've missed all the richness along the way and that journey with the people, what I've observed. And so for me is I try to be more present, get in the moments, enjoy the journey, and don't even think about outcomes, don't even think about goals in that context, and just enjoy, observe with somebody, with my children, with friends, people like you, just be fully immersed. Because I know I'll enjoy the experience better. I'll see a lot more, I'll experience more, but also the other person will feel a lot more because they'll feel that impact, they'll feel valued as well. And so for me, it's being more present in my context.
I love that. Book or podcast that we should all read or listen to?
Yeah, I'm not a great reader, which I think I'm realizing I'm probably dyslexic. I've never been diagnosed, but I think I struggle to read. I find reading really hard work. And so I listen to a lot of podcasts, and there's many out there. Obviously, there's yours, there's mine, there's I think there's 2.5 million or whatever. There's loads. And one I have liked in the last year or so is by Johnny Wilkinson. It's called I Am. And sometimes it goes off a little bit weird tangents, but it's quite thinking about who you are and your bit more of the unconscious piece and a little bit more deeper about you, a bit more about self-awareness. And it's more about that being present type of mindsets. And I quite like some of the people he has on. Some are a bit odd and they go off a bit too spiritually, but I find them really helpful and quite thought-provoking and helping me to get a bit more, I guess, more present in that context.
I will take Johnny Wilkinson out for a walk later. What would your leadership book be entitled?
Well, my leadership book. Well, I started to write a book. I'm a thing about resilience. I love it. It's my absolute passion and thing about sharing and talking and helping. And so I'm there's loads of stuff out there on resilience, personal resilience, but there's very little on team resilience. And the reason I know this, I've just done a master's in psychology, and I did a thesis on team resilience, and I didn't find an awful lot of stuff out there. And so I'm going to write a book that will help people to build resilient teams. I'm not sure what I'll call it, but there's something along those lines, I'm sure. But it'll be about, you know, really helping them as a leader, individuals become more resilient to overcome, you know, uncertainty, failure, and change that we all are faced with right now.
What's the timeline, Julian? When can we get our hands on this book?
Well, I started well in the year, but then as all things got busy, I was going to try and do it for next year at some point. So I don't know. I haven't set myself a goal, which perhaps I need to.
Well, but you're just going to enjoy the process of writing.
Well, that's interesting because that I've spoken to book coaches. And I've got a book coach, and actually that is one of the big things to think about. Actually, you get more out of through the process than actually the book itself, because obviously you work through these things and you write things, you change things, and you know what matters. And I think that, to me, I want to enjoy the process of, and I started quite well, and I really did enjoy it. But I will come back to it, and that will be I aim next year at some point to bring it out. That was the idea.
Okay, last question. Best bit of leadership advice that you've ever received?
this might sound quite an odd one. I remember I was working in an organization, and I was selling soup, which might give you some clue to where I worked. And I was getting quite het up about a situation with a customer at the time. And my boss at the time said to me, "Julian, it is only a can of soup. You are not saving a life. Just get some perspective on it." And it, as much as, you know, let's be passionate about what we do, let's do our best and everything else, it was a real, unless you are saving lives and you are a doctor, very different. But generally what we do doesn't matter if that didn't happen, in a sense of the context of what we do. And it just helped me give a healthy perspective on life and on situations, just to stand back and go, okay, it is only soup, and I'm not saving a life here, and not to get too concerned. And I found that really helpful advice, and I've used it a lot to sort of stand back from situations. I say it doesn't mean we don't get passionate and do a good job. It's just get some perspective on it.
Well, that seems like a perfect way to bring our conversation to a close. So thank you so much, Julian. Gosh, so much in there. I look forward to listening to this back again. And thank you to our audience for tuning in today. Whatever your business challenge this year, the team at Point 3 are here to support you and your people, to help you and them to stress less and smile more. Take care.